Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 5 minutes after 9 a.m., Monday, March 5th, 2010. With me today is Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Thomas, and Senator Egan. The plane is delayed, so we'll be joined when the plane gets in a little bit with the other two members of the committee. We have five bills on the agenda this morning. First up, Senate Bill 235, Chartered Alternative School Funding, followed by Senate Bill 236, Tax Credits on it for Educational Contributions, Senate Bill 312, Vessel Passenger Tax, Senate Bill 301, Power Project Fund, and Senate Bill 287, In-State Gas Pipeline. The hearing on Senate Bill 220, which is the Omnibus Energy Bill, has been postponed. We're still working on a CS on that, and we'll keep the public posted when we bring that back for committee review of the CS. We're going to go ahead and start today on Senate Bill 235 by the Senate Education Committee regarding charter alternative school funding. This is the second hearing on this bill. First hearing was April 1st. The intent today is bring the bill back before the committee to give members the opportunity to express additional concerns and look to the committee. And do we have representation from Senator Meyer's office?
That's right. How could we forget?
Do you have any questions for Senator Meyer's office concerning this bill? Any other additional concerns? There's one fiscal note from the Department of Education and Early Development for $301,000 in general funds, of which $150,000 is requested for adopting the regulations, and the remainder is for one and a half positions to administer the program. Seeing no further, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my office has had some communication with Department of Education, and it appears that we can cut this fiscal note in half, so it's just regulations and not personnel. And I would recommend that we have a conversation about that.
We have somebody from the department here? Okay, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside for further action. Go on to the next committee, or the next bill, Senate Bill 236 by the Senate Education Committee regarding tax credits for education contributions. This is the second hearing on this bill. We heard it for the first time April 1st. The intent today is to bring back before the committee to give members an opportunity to express any additional concerns and look to the committee. We have representation from Senator Meyer. We have 1-0 fiscal note. Do we have any further questions, concerns on this bill? Seeing none, and we have a motion, Senator Huggins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate Bill 236, as amended with attached physical note, be moved from committee.
Okay, we have a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations and attached physical notes. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we'll move the bill from committee to the next committee referral. The next item on the agenda, Senate Bill 312 by the Senate Finance Committee regarding vessel passenger tax. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent is to introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. From my staff, we have Mr. Peterson to come forward to walk us through the bill or introduce the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Stedman. Senate Bill 312 proposes to reduce the commercial passenger vessel excise tax paid by passengers traveling on cruise ships in state marine waters. The current tax is $46 per passenger, and the bill proposes a 25% reduction, which would lower the tax to $34.50 per passenger. The bill will also allow for a reduction in the tax collected by the amount of local taxes paid to a municipality that levies its own head tax. The reduction cannot exceed 50% of $34.50, regardless of the amount of passenger fees charged by other communities. In addition, Senate Bill 312 repeals the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund. As a result, all revenues collected from the head tax would be deposited in the Commercial Passenger Vessel Tax Account in the General Fund. Finally, Senate Bill 312 will require the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to publish a report every 3 years that addresses the projected needs of the communities which are impacted by cruise passengers. The report will also address the extent to which the tax proceeds have been utilized for projects in communities that are directly impacted by cruise passengers. That concludes the initial overview, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. We'll, seeing none, we'll go ahead and have representation from the administration. Mr. Thayer, please. If you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and then if you want to touch on areas of the bill or point out a few things, that would be appreciated.
Good morning, Chairman Stedman and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Curtis Thayer, and I serve as the Deputy Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development for the State of Alaska. On behalf of the administration, I would like to thank the Senate Finance Committee for introducing Senate Bill 312 and providing an opportunity to speak to the issues in this bill. We are supportive of the actions outlined in this bill and want to underscore the urgency to take action this session. As you know, the governor proposed legislation that included the exact provisions included in this bill and also included a marketing component. We believe both elements are needed, making Alaska a more affordable destination for reducing the commercial passenger excise tax and making Alaska more visible by increasing the Alaska Tourism Marketing Program. The department recently published a study showing that tourism packs a huge economic wallop in Alaska. Direct visitor industry spending in Alaska was $2.1 billion, generated 27,000 direct jobs. When accounting for indirect impacts, Alaska's visitors industry generates $3.4 billion and peak employment of over 40,000 Alaskans. But after many decades of growth in this sector, we're facing a decline. By now, most of you heard the numbers. Travel to Alaska was off by more than 7% last year. Visitor spending decreased by $270 million compared to the prior year. Alaska's visitation will continue to decline this summer as 140,000 fewer cruise passengers will travel to our state. While Alaska is expecting to gain two ships in 2011, we're also losing two ships, further prolonging the economic challenges. This is not a southeast or coastal concern. The recent McDowell Group report demonstrates a far-reaching statewide effect on dwindling visitor traffic. We don't know for certain how many family-run small businesses that serve visitors will weather these declines. We do know that the estimated job loss over the two-year period is to be estimated to be 5,000 jobs, and this situation is unsustainable. These jobs feed families and grow our economy. There are jobs in multiple of Alaska small businesses, owned and operated by Alaskans and their families. These businesses run the gamut from fishing guides on the Kenai Peninsula, tour companies in Ketchikan and Sitka, lodging and transportation services in Fairbanks, to restaurants and lodging in Chugach, Matsu, and Anchorage. Additionally, there are hundreds of businesses throughout Alaska that provides goods and services to the tourism industry, including seafood processors, commercial fishermen, mechanics, fuel provider, and numerous professional services. But they're hardly the only ones taking the economic hit. Communities also suffer. The industry as a whole contributes $208 million in direct payments to state and local governments through various bed and sales taxes and other user fees. So as visitation and spending decline, so does tax revenue. If this situation persists, it could lead to additional tax burden being placed on property owners in Alaska. The tourism sector is critically important to the Alaska economy. Since two-thirds of the visitors in Alaska in 2009 arrived by cruise ship, the cruise industry is critically important to the tourism sector. With so many jobs and so much revenue at stake, it is imperative we aggressively advocate for bringing more tourist dollars to our shores. This will help grow our economy and fuel our family incomes. The administration and the Office of Economic Development staff have met with industry representatives, community leaders, and small business owners around the state who rely on tourism. These meetings have helped the governor develop a comprehensive strategy to make Alaska more attractive to industry and travelers alike. Legislation right-sizing the head tax and growing the state's tourism marketing program can address this. The cruise industry has already signaled a willingness to be a partner in the solution by agreeing to drop the lawsuit against the state if the head tax is reduced. However, we are likely facing a two-year delay before cruise passenger volumes increases. Itineraries for 2010 and 2011 have been published. The window is closing for the 2012 summer season. Cruise lines have indicated that they could refrain from making final decisions on 2012 to see what actions are taken by the legislature. The cruise industry expressed appreciation that the state of Alaska and many community and business representatives sent a clear message that we value their business. They understand the need to work together with a common purpose to restore tourism industry to the premier position it once had. Cruising companies also stressed the importance of a statewide marketing program to help draw visitors back to Alaska and other destinations. Without a doubt, there's much work to be done, but there's also much to be encouraged about. It's time to invest in our success and create opportunity for Alaskans. We can grow our economy by bringing more visitors to fuel our own businesses. In short, we should make Alaska a more affordable destination and send a message that we welcome travelers. I urge you to address the situation quickly as possible. Thank you. I also have Joanna Bales and Chris Pogue with Joanna Bales with the Department of Revenue and Chris Pogue with the Department of Law available to answer questions.
We have any initial questions for the administration? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the aspect of the regional fund, if that money is goes into the commercial vessel passenger tax account, could any of that be appropriated to areas other than those that are directly related to the five ports of call? Or
let me,
we have somebody from the Department of Law come forward. Or
good morning, Chris Pogue, State of Alaska, Assistant Attorney General. Through the chair, Senator Thomas, this probably doesn't surprise the committee to know that all tax proceeds go into the general fund and can be appropriated for any public purpose. So I think practically speaking, the guidelines you see in this bill are just guidelines for the legislature and how it ought to spend those proceeds. But this committee, this legislature, has the authority to appropriate these proceeds for any public purpose.
Senator Thomas.
In other words, it was the particular wording of the way it was in the initial bill that caused the difficulty. So removing the wording alleviates the potential problem and causes the lawsuit to go away and allows potentially money to be distributed to areas other than the first five ports of call or those impacted directly. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I'm not sure this is a direct answer to your question, but one of the issues in the lawsuit is how far from the port proceeds can be spent to comply with federal law, that being a statute and the tonnage clause. And so the argument made by the industry is and was that spending those proceeds in non-ports of call was unconstitutional in violation of federal law. That is an issue in the litigation. So yes, resolving or removing this account is part of that issue.
Senator Thomas?
And just the last, and is that agreement to drop the lawsuit, is that a written agreement with the cruise ship industry or just a good understanding handshake kind of thing that we feel comfortable with?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, it's both. We are working on the written agreement as we speak. I take partial responsibility for the delay in that. The Department of Law have been looking closely at the terms that they sent to us. We've modified that agreement. The basic core terms that they sent to us are the same. However, we've changed the format a little bit and changed the signature block. So they've had terms on our desk for quite some time. We've been carefully reviewing those. This morning at 6 o'clock, I sent them back to their lawyer. So I would say in good faith, we're making good progress. We should have the agreement executed, hopefully by the end of the week. Rest assured, we'll have that agreement executed before this bill, if it passes, were to end up on the governor's desk.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Thayer, thank you very much for such compelling numbers this morning for the argument there. But one of the things that the governor seems to be doing is predicating the passage of this legislation on a promise to go ahead and increase the number of cruise ships and not necessarily berths on those cruise ships that were of people that are actually paying the dollars that are there. But my real question has to go with, is the department in favor of looking at a period of time to see if the cruise ship industry does deliver on that promise so that there's an effective date and a sunset date to say that, hey, you haven't done anything to increase its numbers, so we're going to put it back to $50 a head, or you have done something, so we'll keep it at $34.
We have not looked at putting a sunset clause on that provision. The governor was very clear when he met with the industry that he wants to see more ships. Carnival expressed the fact they have 2,000 employees based in Alaska. They want to keep those employees in Alaska. One thing is any cruise ship, any deployment schedule is 18 to 24 months out. So right now we're looking at the 2012, most likely the 2013 season for cruises. And so if this law was to take place, or if this bill was to become law, then we would probably need 2 to 3 years to look at this. To find out the ship deployment schedule. The one thing that we do know is Europe is growing by double-digit numbers. They're building more cruise ships, and the cruise ships are not coming to Alaska. So I think with an aggressive marketing program and the commitment that the state would have expressed with passage of this bill, then we will see more cruise ships.
Follow-up, Senator Olson?
No, that's all I have.
We can have the Department of Law guy come back. He ran away. We're not that scary of a lot, you know. Can you help me a little bit with one of your answers? Under this statute change, the head tax that's collected, then it's general fund money goes into the general fund and can be appropriated anywhere in the state for anything, so we could take it and put it in the Arctic or out in the end of the Aleutian chain?
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to get in a whole lot to the details of litigation, because we're still in litigation, and if this legislation doesn't pass, we're still going to be duking it out with the industry. So I want to make that point and say that it is their position that federal law, both the tonnage clause and 33 USC 5, place strong restrictions on how those proceeds can be spent. That issue is being litigated, and until the court bangs the gavel and issues an order, that's an open issue. But assuming you were to take a conservative approach in applying and spending proceeds, you would spend those proceeds on projects that have direct attributable benefits to passengers, the places they go, the services they need, the infrastructure they utilize, that would ask those passengers to pay their fair share of the cost of those services, infrastructure, and facilities. So one could argue, and I think we have provided advice in a conservative nature in the past, that the proceeds ought to be spent on those types of projects, clearly. But I don't want to foreclose the option that the court may disagree with that position by saying that absolutely has to be the case. But that would be our good conservative advice, that you should spend these proceeds on projects that have a direct attributable benefit to the passengers that you're taxing.
Do we have any, Senator Olson?
Along that line, Mr. Chairman, if I could, you talked about the agreement that's being drawn up between the cruise ship industry and the lawsuit in particular. If the legislature is going to go ahead and allocate those funds to other than the five ports of call throughout the state, is that a violation of the agreement to drop the lawsuit?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, there's no agreement. There's no terms in the agreement at present as to how the proceeds are spent. The key terms in the agreement, and this is probably no surprise, are the reductions to the tax rate. That's the heart and soul of it. The reductions, as you know, there's a reduction and an offset. And if the reduction and the offset come in this bill or another bill, and they pass and are signed into law by the governor, the terms of the agreement state that they'll dismiss the pending lawsuit. I think to further emphasize the answer, I think the periodic review process is geared towards looking at how the state's been utilizing the proceeds to see, do we have enough money to cover the cost of the projects we need to cover, or do we have too much money? So I think the focus will be to look at how the money's been spent to get a gauge as to whether or not the tax rate is appropriate. And it doesn't have a sunset clause. That is obviously an option for the committee to consider, but that sort of disrupts a little bit of the stability of the tax proceeds coming in on a yearly basis. So the periodic review process just sort of maximizes the legislature's ability to sort of look at this and see what's going on and make decisions whether the rate should go up, should go down, should stay the same.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas.
Just along the same lines again, with the thought that if the case is dismissed, then we would probably rely on your good conservative judgment and procedures that the state would follow thereafter. And is the case being, would you expect that it be dismissed with or without prejudice?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, with prejudice. That is a term that came in their agreement, and it remains in our agreement.
Okay, thank you.
Any other initial questions for the department or departments? And we have quite a few people signed up, so we'll work through this. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring up Mr. John Binkley first, and then we're going to go to the off-nets and the LIOs around the state, and then we'll come into the room, and we have three pages of folks signed up. There's probably a dozen or so maybe in the room, or a little less than that, and then off online there's probably at least that, if not more. So we'll try to get through this today, but we'll see how it goes. Mr. Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, good morning. I'm John Binkley. I represent the Alaska Cruise Association and reside in Fairbanks, and I appreciate the committee coming forward with this bill, which is really a policy change from the state. And I believe that it's going to go a long ways in reaching out to the industry, saying that we do care about this industry, the Alaskans that are affected by this industry, and we want to make some changes that encourages the industry to invest in Alaska and come back to Alaska. I think Mr. Thayer, Mr. Pogue did an excellent job in framing the issue, the importance of stability in tax policy, the importance of stability in a marketing program. Both are key elements in really getting the industry back to where it was in the past and hopefully growing it from there. The governor in his discussions with the industry was clear that he wanted, if this went forward, an agreement that the litigation would go away. We've engaged in discussions with the department on the details of that agreement. As Mr. Pogue indicated, we got the latest version at 6 o'clock this morning, so that's now being run through the various legal departments of all the companies involved. A quick look at it doesn't seem to find any substantive changes, and I would anticipate that they would be in agreement with that and be willing to sign the stipulation. So with that, I'll make it brief and be available for any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Mr. Binkley? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and start our process here. Thank you. Start our process here. What I'd like to do is have everybody respect the other folks that want to testify this time. So if we could keep comments to 2 minutes, keep them on the subject matter, which is the bill in front of us, Senate Bill 312. Start by introducing yourself and who you represent, and then I'll start the timer and go ahead and continue. And if you run long, I'm going to ask you to sum up, and I'd like you to immediately sum up so I don't have to be muting the particular individuals, because we have quite a list. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and start with Mr. Carl Amelon from Ketch Clan. Mr. Amelon.
I'm here to answer questions that the committee may have, and I'll be available in that context.
Okay, and you might as well identify yourself for the record.
Carl Amelon, City Manager, City of Ketchikan.
Do you have a position on this bill?
We do. We favor the bill, Senator Stedman. The loss of cruise ship passengers is having a very negative effect in Ketchikan and in city government particularly. Based on projected passenger counts for 2010, the city is looking at a revenue loss in excess of $2 million. Without relief being granted to the industry, our biggest industrial base is suffering a very significant blow.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to Dan Blockhurst, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dan Blockhurst. Last name is spelled B-O-C-K-H-O-R-S-T. I'm the manager of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, 1900 First Avenue here in Ketchikan. I would note that Senate Bill number 312, while the Assembly has not taken a formal position on the bill is very consistent with the longstanding formal policies adopted by the Borough Assembly. Later today at a formal meeting, the Assembly will be taking up this bill for consideration, and frankly, I anticipate that they will express their endorsement at that time. As Mr. Amelon indicated, not only is the city of Ketchikan going to suffer significant fiscal impacts in the community, significant economic impacts, the borough government here in Ketchikan will similarly face impacts. We anticipate losses in excess of $900,000 in the current fiscal year as a result of the downturn in the tourist industry. The Assembly has previously advocated a reduction in the state cruise ship passenger excise tax. Senate Bill number 312 would continue to be make available to the Ketchikan Gateway Borough a share of $2.50 per passenger for providing infrastructure and services to the cruise ship industry. I would echo the comments of Mr. Thayer earlier that urgency is critical in dealing with this matter given the circumstances that he outlined. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today. We'll now go to Skagway. Tom Smith, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Tom Smith, manager, municipality of Skagway. Point out that we do feel it prudent for the state to revisit this, as we did pass a resolution earlier this last fall requesting that. However, our initial review shows that we do have a concern in particular with Section 5, and without getting into any detail on that, I would advise the committee that our Assembly be taking a closer look at the bill later this week, and as you move into your next hearing, we would appreciate the opportunity to provide that additional input into the bill. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. We're going to now move on to the LIOs. We're going to jump up to Fairbanks. We have two individuals signed up in Fairbanks. Mr. Tim Kearney?
Yes, Tim Cerny.
You can identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the bill, please.
Yes, I'm Tim Cerny. I'm a business owner in Fairbanks. I'm a member of the Alaska Act Steering Committee, and I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 312. Alaska Act now has almost 200 members within the Fairbanks community, and we fully support this reduction of the proposed reduction in the head tax. And we support the legislative effort to get our economy back on track. This bill will be good for Alaskans and Alaska businesses. Especially important for our Fairbanks community within the summer. We've seen tremendous loss in jobs within the community, and this will be a good first step on getting this back on track with the tourism industry. I'd like to speak from personal experience. I can tell you that the loss in tour passengers is how it's affecting my hotel business in Fairbanks. Fountainhead is projecting a 2010 summer staff level.
Did we lose
them? The loss of these jobs is directly related to the decreases associated with reductions in cruise ship travel. We need to do something to reverse the trend now, and Senate Bill 312 will help. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today. We'll go now to Deborah Hickok, Fairbanks. Hickok and Fairbanks. Is she on?
Thank you, Senator Stedman and Finance Committee members. I'm here in my capacity of President and CEO of the Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau and Vice Chair of the Board of Directors for the Alaska Travel Industry Association. By way of background, in Fairbanks, roughly half of our summer visitors is from cruise land tours and half is non-cruise. In the summer of 2000 alone, we saw an 18% reduction in bed tax, and individual businesses, some of them suffered greater losses. On behalf of both FCVB and ATIA, we'd like to convey our wholehearted support for the reduction of the head tax from $46 to $34.50, and concurrently, we support a sustainable tourism marketing through the passage of a tourism marketing tax credit. Thank you for your consideration.
And your name is, please?
Deb Hickok.
Okay, thank you. We'll now jump back to the southern end of the state. We'll go to Ketchikan. Rick Erickson, please.
Good morning, Senator Stedman and members of the committee, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning. My name is Rick Erickson, and I work for Survey Point Holdings, and I'm also a member of Alaska ACT. I'm here in Ketchikan representing 20 members of Alaska ACT today. We support this committee's efforts, and so that I don't take up too much of your time, I'll be speaking on behalf of the members here today and will be brief. This is the first step in the process to get Alaska back on track and show the world Alaska is open for cruise business. The companies represented here today are dependent on cruise ships and their livelihood, and we hope this process will keep more ships from leaving. The handful of environmentalists who initiated ballot measure 2 had nothing to lose from their actions. Their families did not depend on the cruise industry for their income. We also believe this will help solve the lawsuit between the state of Alaska and the Alaska Cruise Association, which could last for years and further hinder growth in the tourism industry. And as promised, keeping it short, last but not least, thank you, Senator Stedman, and the committee for your efforts and time today.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. Next up, Patty Mackey, please.
Thank you, Senator Stedman, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Patty Mackey, Executive Director of the Ketchikan Visitors Bureau. I am also an associate member of Alaska ACT and speaking as a member of the Board of Directors of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. As has been said already by representatives of my community at this hearing this morning and many times in your offices and in front of you at other hearings, Ketchikan is heavily dependent on the cruise industry as part of our overall tourism, and it's a very huge component of that. We are also, though, representing members who are dependent on non-cruise visitation. The tourism industry brings 100 in local to our community, represents 1,500 direct jobs, and we are very pleased to see that the Senate Finance Committee is moving forward on the move to reduce the cruise ship head tax that's been in place now for several years and is beginning to show a lot of signs of real damage to our economy locally. At the same time, we continue to stress the need for marketing to breathe new life into travel to Alaska. We have businesses that are reporting anywhere from 20% to 40% drops in income during the last season, and some reporting similar losses for the season prior. We have fishing lodges that are staying closed till July 4th this year, which is something I've never heard of in the 15 years I've been in my position. We still seek a long-term solution to marketing and hope that you will consider efforts in that regard, and want to thank you for your fast action on the reduction of the head tax. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty, for your testimony today. We're going to go on now to Joseph Lanham.
Hi. Good morning, Senator Stedman. I'm Joseph Lanham. I'm district president for Wells Fargo Bank. I'm also a member of Alaska ACT. I'm in charge of community banking in Southeast Alaska. We continue to see that despite the economy down south, that vacation, when we talk to customers about financial planning, vacation is still their number one use of funds for discretionary spending. They still they want to put off other purchases, but they still intend to take vacations. One of the things that we've seen with the decrease of tourism is that this has been impacted from a synergy of marketing standpoint. And what I mean by that is if the boats are coming, we benefit, even though we don't have the urbanity or the population base to support large marketing like the Caribbean or Europe or some of the other places. Because those boats are coming there, those industries market Alaska on behalf of us to bring people here. We benefit greatly from and the seasonal workers coming in, the small business expansion, and the overall increase in economy. Last year, we saw a decrease in that sector, but fortunately it was buoyed by the fact that Washington had large salmon runs, and some of that processing was moved up to Ketchikan. This year, you look at Petersburg, Ocean Beauty's not opening. Trident has already indicated to us that they are not going to be bringing in seasonal workers into this area. And now, with tourism decreasing, it looks like Southeast could be in for quite a hit this year. And cruise ships, like was mentioned, offered a two-year lead time, 18 to 24 months. That helps provide a foundational base to our natural resource economy that can be planned on to help take out our cyclical business, our highly cyclical business. Charter regulations are coming into play. There's a decrease in the halibut tax. You have this drop in tourism. And then the federal monetary policy is well poised for an increasing rate environment. We fully expect housing values, if this is not changed, to continue to erode. Small business expansion will drop. And a decrease in credit availability due to the longer to market housing and less building permits being happening in our area that will send off indicators that we are in a decline or a decreasing environment. We fully support this bill and a decrease in the tax, and is to send a signal that Alaska is open for business and to re-get that capacity here so that these industries market on behalf of Alaskans and we can continue to grow business in Southeast.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll pick up Dick Coos, please.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. My name's Dick Coos, and I'm here representing myself. I just want to say thank you for introducing this bill, and I hope that the committee can move it forward. It's something that we do need to do because the cruise lines have a two-year lead time on bringing more passengers back in, and 150,000 or thereabouts that we're losing this year is going to have a significant impact. Anyway, thank you, and let's see if we can get this passed this year.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today, Mr. Coos. Rex Westergaard. Rex?
My name is Rex Westergaard. I live at 3826 Hillside Road, Ketchikan, Alaska, and I'm one of the 20 folks that are sitting here in the LIO in Ketchikan. I just wanted to say I am highly in favor of this bill, and I don't have anything else to add. Thank you very much for your opportunity to let me testify.
Thank you for your testimony and being on point. Now we'll go to Sitka. Fred Reeder, please.
Good morning, Senator Stedman and committee members. I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 312 this morning. This bill goes a long way in helping to revitalize the visitor industry in Alaska, and I want to thank the senators for having the foresight to bring this legislation forward. I believe that by reducing the head tax to a level that will more realistically meet the needs of our infrastructure requirements as it pertains to cruise ships, we are sending a very positive message that Alaska is again open for business. This legislation also allows those communities that already have a head tax they have enacted to pay for their docks to be discounted from the state head tax. This legislation will be good for business, and should help turn around the decline in cruise passenger visitations and the subsequent job losses to the people of Alaska. The original legislation in 2006 was brought on by a few extremists who had no personal stake in the disastrous effects it would bring to the Alaskan economy and Alaska families. It will be so bad in Sitka this summer that I cannot even hire one of my own sons. I have no job for him. It's sad. In Sitka alone, we are looking at job losses, well over 100 people, and economic losses in the millions of dollars to local businesses. The loss in sales tax revenue to the city of Sitka will be over $1.5 million in comparison to 2008. I'm sure the city of Sitka will lobby the legislature for an increase in municipal revenue sharing to help offset this decline in their sales tax receipts. This money that they would ask for, that they would not need had it not been for the disaster to effects of the 2006 initiative and the subsequent loss of cruise passengers. I urge you to pass this legislation and to encourage other senators to vote yes on this very important bill if they have a chance. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
And you are?
Fred Reeder with Survey Point and Alaska Act.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Fred. Even though I know who you are, we just need it for the record.
That's fine.
Okay, thank you. We'll go now to Senator Huggins says, the mighty Matt Sue. Bonnie Quill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to acknowledge, show appreciation that Senate Bill 312 addresses one of the two important issues for the tourism industry today. It is still imperative that a long-term tourism funding solution to grow the visitor industry is critically needed. The MAPSU Convention and Visitors Bureau Board of Directors passed a resolution on March 26th that supports the governor's package that provides additional tourism marketing funding and reduces the cruise ship head tax. Both actions are needed to keep the visitor industry afloat. The MAPSU CVB relies on the research-based marketing efforts of ATIA. Reinvesting travel industry revenues back into Alaska tourism marketing program will stabilize and increase jobs for Alaskans and will lead to greater future revenues for the state and local communities like the MAPSU. Last year was the first time the MAPSU borough bed tax declined at over 10%. Another decline this year significantly reduces the MAPSU CVB's marketing efforts. The tourism industry needs both actions, a reduction in the head tax and a tourism tax credit to increase tourism marketing and provide economic development for an industry in decline. Thank you.
Yes, and if you can introduce yourself for the record, Bonnie, so we've got that and who you represent, please.
Sure, I'm sorry. Bonnie Quill. I'm the executive director of the MAPSU Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Okay, thank you. That takes care of MAPSU. We're going to go now to Anchorage. I'd like to remind everybody to please speak to the bill in front of us, which is Senate Bill 312. Start with Paul Landis, please. If you could introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and keep your comments at 2 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Paul Landis. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Sierra Alaska Tourism Corporation and also serve on the Steering Committee for Alaska Act. I'm here to offer support for Senate Bill 312, which presents a sensible and justified plan to reduce the cruise ship head tax. Sierra Alaska Tourism owns and operates large hotel properties in Talkeetna and Seward. We also have a substantial investment in marine vessels providing day tours in Kenai Fjords and Prince William Sound. These businesses depend directly on the cruise ship industry, which supplies nearly 70% of our passengers and guests. During the summer season, we have the capacity to create 460 jobs. Last year, however, there was a reduction in cruise passengers, and we barely hit 400 in our job numbers. 2010 is projected to be even worse, with 142 less cruise passengers visiting our state. The number of jobs we create will drop for the second consecutive year. The simple fact is our daily operations and the jobs we create are dependent on a strong and vibrant cruise industry. You would benefit from a bill that encourages cruise ships to return to Alaska, as would a long list of other Alaska travel and hospitality companies. Sierra Alaska Tourism does significant business with food and beverage suppliers, fuel providers, all forms of media outlets, building contractors, and other professional groups, to name a few. These are the secondary level of companies who benefit from tourism and benefit and depend on our success in order to sustain their own. And speaking to the head tax directly, to those who have invested in tourism infrastructure in Alaska, there is only one truth. The $46 head tax is driving ships away, and the resulting reduction of cruise passengers is devastating to our industry. Lastly, and of significant importance, avoiding litigation is absolutely the right move for Alaska. The cruise industry has indicated that $34.50 is a number they can live with, and so should we.
Can I get you to sum up, please?
On behalf of Sierra Alaska Tourism and Alaska Act, we fully support the reduction in the cruise taxes that you proposed in this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now go to Tammy Griffin, please.
Good morning, and for the record, my name is Tammy Griffin. I am a lifelong Alaskan in the hospitality industry for 35 years. I am the director of operations for a hotel management company. The hotel group manages 8 hotels in Alaska, 6 in Anchorage, 1 in Fairbanks, 1 in Seward, and I am a board member of the Alaska Hotel Lodging Association. And I am here to support Senate Bill 312. I want to thank Senator Stedman and Hoffman for introducing this legislation. It is in line with Alaska Hotel Lodging Association's legislative priorities, which include to help create a healthy economic climate for Alaska's cruise ship industry. My company does not have specific contracts with any cruise ship company. However, we, of course, benefit from the visitors that are brought in by the cruise ship into our state. And we fully support 312, and thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you for your testimony this morning. Susan Gilpatrick, please.
Good morning. My name is Susan Gilpatrick. I'm one of the little guys in rural Alaska. I'm here because Senate Bill 312 has such an impact on my life and my livelihood. I have two businesses that are greatly affected by tourism. One is indirectly affected, Gilpatrick's Greenhouses in Valdez, and one is directly affected, Gilpatrick's Hotel Chitna in Chitna, Alaska. My greenhouse business in Valdez has been successfully operating for 19 years. It has brought in the income that provided for my family. I sell about 2,000 baskets and pots each year in a town of about 4,000 people. And the reason I sell so much is because Valdez is a tourist destination with hotels, restaurants, cruise and charter businesses, RV parks, countless B&Bs. These businesses in the city as well dress up for the tourist season with lots of flowers. So even though my customers are local and not tourists, a large portion of my income is due to tourism. It's imperative that we all recognize the trickle-down impact of tourism to Alaskans and encourage tourism growth in every way possible. My other business, Gilpatrick's Hotel Chitna, is very dependent on tourism. It's a small historic hotel, restaurant, and saloon. The hotel was built in 1914 during the mine boom. At that time, Chitna was a hub for travel to and from Kennecott and the rest of the state. When the mine shut down, Chitna went bust and became a ghost town. Now, with the marketing of Wrangell St. Elias Park, it's becoming a travel hub again. Because of tourism, Chitna is seeing economic growth. We have new businesses, services, and projects starting, all of which bring jobs to our small rural community. Some of my guests come from Alaska and more from the lower 48, but a large portion of my guests are international. The international market is one that small businesses like me and others in my community cannot afford to reach on our own, nor would we know where or how to go about it. We need help. We need the marketing efforts of ATIA, the state of Alaska, and the big guys, the cruise ships and their hotel partners. I ride on the coattails of their advertising efforts. These businesses and organizations need to be recognized for their importance to our economy at every level and encouraged in any way that we can to continue to invest in us. Please support Senate Bill 312. We need to reach those global markets and bring that tourism income to us so that we can continue to stay in business and provide jobs and economic growth. When you support the tourism...
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Gilpatrick.
Thank you.
Deanna Crockett?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Deanna Crockett, and I'm a projects coordinator with the Resource Development Council for Alaska. RDC also holds a seat on the Steering Committee of Alaska Act. RDC members consist of oil and gas, mining, timber, fishing, and tourism companies, as well as Native corporations, local communities, organized labor, and industry support firms. We are a statewide organization, and indeed the cruise ship head tax issue is a statewide issue, as reduced numbers and cruise passengers affects communities all throughout our state. RDC believes that voters did not fully understand the impact of the 2006 ballot initiative that instituted the head tax along with several other taxes and regulations on the cruise industry in Alaska. While they did not understand it then, certainly they will understand now as ships have begun to leave Alaska, resulting in at least 140,000 less visitors to our state. These visitors spend money in our communities and provide for Alaskan jobs, and their departure has left a wound in the tourism economy. RDC supports the legislature in improving the state economy throughout all resource sectors, and certainly a reduction in the cruise ship head tax will enhance the tourism industry and bring jobs back to Alaskans. We strongly encourage you to take fast action and reduce the head tax this session. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. That concludes the list in Anchorage. We'll now move to Valdez. Colleen Stevens, please.
Hello. Thank you for providing the opportunity to testify. I'm Colleen Stevens, and I'm representing our family's tourism company, which is Stan Stevens Cruises, as well as I am the president for the Valdez Convention and Visitors Bureau, our community organization for tourism marketing. Briefly, just our community has had a pretty substantial hit over the last year with tourism, both those that have been coming via the highway or those via coming the cruise industry. We've seen close to between a 20% on average decline, and our business itself was just over 20%. What that equates to is we had 20% less employees we were able to hire over the last year. Coming into this next summer, we're looking at the same forecast, with cruise arrivals decreased as port of calls here, and also with deployment coming across, we have fewer land packages coming through Valdez. Those numbers can be stifling to a community of 4,000. Therefore, we are in support of Senate Bill 312 and also want to encourage the continued discussion of a long-term marketing solution. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes our off-net and our LIOs around the state. We'll now come back into the room. There's about 10 or so people signed up to testify. I'm just going to start at the top and on page one and work down the list. So first up, Mr. Chip Thoma, please. And if we could, of course, introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and then keep your comments to a couple minutes, please.
I'm going to keep my comments right to the bill, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Chip Thoma. I'm the president of Responsible Cruising in Alaska. We are the group that brought about the state head tax and also the local head tax here in Juneau 10 years ago. Been marvelously successful. Juneau's collected over $50 million in that 10 years, and it's all gone for dock improvements and improvements for the cruise industry. And also the state tax has collected over $122 million, and the majority of that has been spent also for, I think, very worthwhile projects, especially those that are being proposed this year. What I've seen so far in the FY11 from the administration has been just excellent projects. So that's exactly what the purpose of the initiative was. And what I'd like to do is just critique your bill. And Mr. Chairman, I want to compliment you. I think it's a great bill compared to 311. And so I think there is some room to improve it. And hopefully to move it. I think there's some reason to do that. Unfortunately, the numbers that are being used are industry numbers. I don't think that they can be substantiated. There's no reason to decrease this fund by 25% and put a cap on it down to 34. We're losing 15% of our visitors next year. Why not decrease it by 15% and bring it down to 39? And there's also no reason to have Section 5 in the bill, which is the cross-off for Juneau and Ketchikan, because that, in turn, decimates the fund. And that fund is shared by not just the five first port of calls, but all 12 ports. All 12 ports can apply for projects that come out of this fund. And the only way that you can keep this fund whole is to have some kind of fund left. And if we go down to $39, there will be adequate funds to build all the ports and port facilities that we need throughout the state. And I think pay off the debts for instance, in Ketchikan that we're doing right now. I think all these are admirable things that we're doing with this money right now. So I urge you to take a look at this in the broad sense. I think fair taxation is a good thing for all industries, whether it be oil and gas, whether it be mining, whether it be the cruise ships. And this tax that we have right now, I think, is working. And we can have a lowering of that tax by perhaps 15%. But let's not do a double dip. Let's not do a cap and skim where we're taking off the money at the bottom, too. Keep that fund whole and at least have the latitude for future legislatures if the economy does improve dramatically to raise that back up to 46 again. I don't think there's any reason to deny the state that kind of funding. All these projects benefit the passengers and the cruise ship industry. None of this is being hoarded. That's the charge that's over and over again heard, that the money's being hoarded. I think it's horrible that that kind of thing goes out. It's not true. The money's being spent properly. And I urge you to continue with that process. Okay. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Joe Gildoff, please.
Thank you, Chairman Stedman. My name is Joe Geldhoff. I'm a lawyer in Juneau, Alaska. I'm representing myself, and I'm here to testify briefly on Senate Bill 312. I commend you for dividing the issue and separating the marketing. With respect to 312, I give my unconditional support to ending the sub-account that we refer to as the regional account. It's caused more confusion than assistance, and I unconditionally urge you to remove that. I'll give you my conditional support from where I sit, and I suppose I'm one of Mayor Reeder's extremists that helped draft this bill, but there will be a time when indeed you should lower the excise tax. This is not that time. Alaska ports, whether it's Anchorage, Homer, the Prince William Sound ports, all over Southeast, have large substantial needs for infrastructure. And at the point where you can gauge that we have sufficient funds to meet those needs so that we're the best tourism destination possible, then you should lower this excise tax on passengers. But we are not at that point. And if you need to go forward with some sort of short-term tax relief, something in the neighborhood of about 15%, with an effective date that's not immediate, but in the future, at some point you'll sweat through those details, may be appropriate. I also think it's wildly premature to allow the deduction, the further deduction, from a reduced excise tax for the Ketchikan and Juneau. At some point, you could not just lower that, but you could eliminate that. But Juneau and Ketchikan need to finish the capitalization of their very large Panamax wharfs. So I guess in summary, I am not against a reduction or even a partial elimination of this, but now is not the time. If you have to do something this year, I urge you strongly to work with the effective dates and make this work for all of our ports, because you don't want to be in a situation where you've reduced, then skimmed, and you short yourself, this committee and the entire legislature, with funds to address very real needs in places like Wrangell, Homer, Kodiak, and our other port communities. The last thing I'll say, in briefly, the charge of extremism here is offensive in the sense that, you know, Hugh Malone, former Speaker of the House, was a vital part of this initiative. In 2000, Drew Pierce, Rick Halford, Al Adams, John Torgerson, and Senator Kelly all voted for a $50 tax, $4 more an excise tax than that. I wouldn't characterize any of those individuals who have served in the legislature as extremists. And what you have before you is an opportunity to revisit an issue after 4 years, mindful that the legislature has amended the initiative 4 times successfully, often with the cooperation of people who were advocates for it, with the benefit of the administration. But the approach that's before you is ill-conceived at this point, and I look forward to you marking it up and making it work for all Alaskans. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, thank you. Mike Stedman, please.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Mike Stedman. I am Vice President of Flight Operations for Wings Airways here in Juneau, also a member of Alaska Act. My business has been directly impacted by this head tax. We were off by about 20% last year. We anticipate at least another 15%, if not more, with the reduction of 140,000 tourists coming to Juneau. We're laying up 20% of our aircraft fleet this summer because of this, and as a result of that, we're going to have less jobs. So in my mind, this bill is a jobs bill, and I implore all the committee members to speak with all the members in the House and the Senate and pass this bill, because like I say, it is a jobs bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Jeremy Geiser. Geiser.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Jeremy Geiser, and 1122 Timberline Court. And I just want to urge this body, through the chair, to consider lowering this tax, because it is good for Alaskans. It's good for all of us in business who are trying to make our future in this great state, provide for our families, and give something back to our community. This industry is, I feel sometimes like, especially in Juneau, like we're the redheaded stepchild. And it has been a huge relief, Senator, to see this bill introduced in the legislature. It means so much to so many of us, and I just want to thank you for your work. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob Janes?
Senator Stedman and members of the committee, my name is Bob Janes. I am an owner-operator of an eco-tourism business here in Juneau, along with my wife, Dawn. I want to thank you very much for listening to the stories of these many Alaskans that are involved in this wonderful industry and dependent on it. Their employees are dependent on it, and I think our communities are dependent on it. I think this is the time to consider lowering the tax. Prudence would tell me that that when there's questions, we take the conservative route. And to me, the conservative route is to lower the tax, continue to encourage the industry to expand, and continue to allow our communities to benefit both through tax revenues and through employment in this incredible situation that we've experienced over the past few years with tourism growth. So I encourage the for my employees, for the business I've built over the last 15 years, and for our community and the many people in Alaska, I encourage you to move this bill along, and I thank you very much for listening to our stories today.
Yeah, thank you. Rourke Brown, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Stedman. For the record, my name is Rourke Brown. I'm a small tourism business owner based in Homer, Alaska. I'm also the volunteer government relations chairman for the Alaska Travel Industry Association. I'll be very brief. HEI's board of directors, on behalf of our 1,100 plus member businesses, has unanimously endorsed the governor's comprehensive plan to restore the health of Alaska's travel industry, including the head tax adjustment addressed in Senate Bill 312. Visitors to Alaska come to our state in basically two ways. They either come here via cruise ship or they come on their own. It's vital that we pass this legislation to help bring cruise passengers back to Alaska, just as it's absolutely crucial to aggressively market our state as a destination. For all of the thousands of tourism businesses, large and small, that depend on the flow of visitors to feed their families. Thank you for your interest in helping this industry.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. Sandra Looms, please.
thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Sandra Looms. I'm sorry, I'm nervous. I'm with Talkeetna Air Taxi, the business manager, and I also have served on the Matsu CBB board for 7 years in the past. I'm not currently, was a past president. I am on the ATIA marketing committee. I've been on the school board at the Matsu, and our company employs 30 to 35 employees during the summer full-time and 6 full-time year-round. One of the compelling things about, and I thank you so much for bringing this bill forward and hopefully passing it. It's very important to our company. We do not have any direct cruise business at our company. We don't have any contracts with any cruise companies, but we definitely know that they bring people to Alaska, and it's very, very vital for our business and the health of our business and being able to employ our employees. I'm here for everyone at Talkeetna Air Taxi, as well as many people on the Talkeetna Chamber of Commerce, of which I'm active. We all rely on this industry to keep our businesses going and buy food for our families. I was in an Easter egg hunt yesterday at the Senior Center in Talkeetna, and there was probably 40 kids running around looking for eggs. And I looked around at all the adults and the Honor Society that was there, and I probably a good half or more are reliant on the tourism industry. And I know that I've watched the rural businesses go down in the last few years. And I know that I'm only supposed to speak to one part, but the heart and the mind are separate parts, but they're connected. And I believe the tourism marketing tax is a part of a holistic approach to helping the tourism industry be healthy here. We're the second biggest provider of jobs in the state. And I think it's just vital that the whole picture be looked at and not picked apart. With the numbers that come out, it's just, why wouldn't we look at both elements? And I thank you so much for bringing this one forward today. Fully support it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And again, we want to keep to the bill in front of us. Senate Bill 312, please. Probably going to mess this pronunciation up. I could see it coming. Tanja Kajan? Kajan?
You did.
Good morning. It's Tanya Cadigan, for the record. That's all right. I'm here as a member of Alaska Act, but also as a small business owner with Caribou Crossings, a retail business here in Juneau. And I'm here in support of the bill. I started in tourism when I was 12 years old. 25 years later, I own my own business, which I'm very proud of. My payroll each season with local employees is about $150,000. I represent over 60 Alaskan artists who I spend upwards of $300,000. So as I look out to the next two seasons, after just barely surviving the roughest season of my life, I'm terrified, I'm perplexed, I don't know what to do as we see these numbers diminish and diminish. How do I continue to support the Alaskans that I've been supporting? How do I feel supported in Alaska amongst the members of my community and members in the state to continue my business? We've become, in the 25 years that I've been in tourism, the most expensive ports of call in the entire planet, in the world. So how would the cruise lines continue to feel as if they want to continue to come to Alaska and spend the money to come to Alaska when it's costing so much? I just beg you, please, to consider the importance of this bill, not just on a big level, not big cruise ships and big companies, and you know, I hear all these numbers and figures and all these employees. It's personal for a lot of us, incredibly deeply personal, and we've spent our lives and continue to hope to provide opportunity for all the members of Alaska. And one more quick thing. I was thinking about the beauty of this industry and how I employ 16-year-olds. My dad, who's retired, is 76 years old and working as a whale watch captain. And it's a pretty amazing industry that can provide jobs for 16 to 76. It reaches out to everybody as a means of income and continued job opportunities. So thank you kindly for your time and for your understanding.
Thank you for your testimony today. Brett Carlson, please.
Good morning. I'm Brett Carlson. I cook for a living in Coldfoot and Dead Horse, Alaska. And I just wanted to share that the impacts of cruise visitation really do extend far beyond the southern coast of Alaska. A certain percentage of those cruisers choose to go further north, and they're going to impact different people in our region. It might be Dorothy and John, who are selling folk art to visitors on their way to the Arctic Ocean when they stop for a meal at the Yukon River. It might be Harriet in Onaktuvuk Pass, who greets these same visitors when they're in when they fly from Coldfoot to Onaktuvuk Pass on an optional excursion in the evening. It might be Jack and Wiseman, who greets visitors flying from Fairbanks, cruise visitors on an optional excursion to the Brooks Mountain Range in Wiseman, Alaska. Or Nathaniel in Barrow, Alaska, where his Auriga Tours takes people out to the furthest north point. So each of these rural entrepreneurs is going to be very impacted by the 142,000 less visitors coming to Alaska this summer. In the Arctic, visitation was down Yukon River Arctic Circle 30% this past year, Brooks Range 40%, Arctic Coast 50%. And as certainly a couple of you know, in rural Alaska, new dollars are very scarce, and a little can go a long way. The winter has been a financial juggle for a lot of the rural families that we work with. And without improvement in the season ahead, the economic challenges may become too much. I guess in conclusion, the bottom line is this head tax reduction is really about the creation of wealth. It's about how we as Alaskans can increase the $2.1 billion coming in to balance Alaska's family budgets. It's about how we can increase the $120+ million coming in from the travel industry to balance local budgets. And very importantly, over time, if we pass a head tax reduction and grow Alaska's travel industry, we're also going to be able to increase the Alaska's travel industry's contribution to balancing the state's budget. So thanks for listening. Thanks for your service to the state, and your work is appreciated.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the signups in the room, but we're going to jump back here. There's one got handed a late slip out of Homer. Jack Polster, please. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and keep the 2 minutes, please.
Oh, hello? Yeah, my name is Jack Polster. I am from Homer, and I'm representing myself. I am adamantly opposed to any change in the vessel passenger tax as it is presently written and was originally mandated by the 2006 vote. The democratic process back then effectively polled the voters of Alaska, and it resulted in a 3-1. Again, 3-1. Taxes presently, okay. Yes, presently written and enforced. Now I know that through time changes occur and they have to be addressed. In the last 4 years that may have been the case. I feel at this point your bill should be tabled, taken up next year, given more attention. There is information that Mr. Ross Klein from the Eastern Canadian provinces has information, which if you haven't made it available to yourself, would be very convincing that the cruise industry is, as they used to say, is not all it's cracked up to be. Very comprehensive and informative information, Mr. Ross Klein.
You still have him? Mr. Polster, if you could sum up, please.
Yes, there's a website called eTurbo News, which I found interesting. It's put out by the cruise industry. And I found it fascinating in the fact that while Mr. Parnell and others were given a sob story in Miami, the eTurbo News website, which I assumed was intended for potential investors who might want to invest in the cruise industry stock, that things are financially very, very fine. Come aboard and help us with our capitalization and make big bucks along the way. They are not hurting financially. Any reduction in head tax is absurd. I fully understand that you folks down there, many of them have been given contributions by the cruise industry, but I would point out to you at the 3-1 odds, 3-1 ratio, there are many voters out here who by their mass will be able to overwhelm the influence that the cruise industry has been able to affect by their contributions to you, and that you'd be very careful if in fact you want to retain your incumbency to effectively table this bill or certainly vote against it.
You want to finish up, Mr. Polster, please?
That concludes his testimony.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. That concludes our off-net and LIO. We have one fiscal note in your packet from the Department of Revenue reflecting an annual loss of $22 million in cruise passenger vessel receipts. Do we have any final questions or comments by the committee members? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside for further review. Take up our next piece of legislation, which is Senate Bill 301. By the Governor regarding Power Project Fund, this is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. Sarah Fisher Goad, please. And we'll have a brief at ease while some people exit the room. Sarah Fisher Goad, could you please introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and help us with this bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Fisher Goad. I'm Deputy Director of Operations for the Alaska Energy Authority and the Alaska Industrial Development Authority. Thank you for scheduling Senate Bill 301 for a hearing. Senate Bill 301 authorizes the Alaska Energy Authority to sell loans from the Power Project Fund to raise capital for new projects. It also authorizes the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority to purchase the loan portfolio. In addition to authorizing this sale and purchase, the bill also authorizes the Alaska Energy Authority to establish fees for the Power Project Fund loans. Mr. Chairman, the bill is relatively straightforward. I do have a sectional analysis that was provided for the committee, and there is also the memorandum of understanding between AIDA and AEA with respect to outlining the terms of the sale. I could either go through the sectional with you or answer any questions for committee members.
Why don't you, if you could, walk us through the sectional analysis, please?
Certainly. Section 1 of the bill amends 4245-010A to allow the proceeds of the sale anticipated by the legislation to be deposited into the Power Project Fund. Section 2 repeals and reenacts the authority to adopt regulations and allows AEA to establish fees for the applications and loan origination. Section 3 of the legislation amends 010 to add new subsections K to provide that those fees collected will be deposited into the general fund, and provides subsection L to provide AEA to sell the loans of the PPF with this legislative approval, and allows AEA to repurchase the loans sold under this subsection which default. If any default, there are no delinquencies right now and there are no defaults with the Power Project Fund. What this section does do is allow AEA to retain the risk that it currently has in case any loans do end up defaulting, that AIDA does not assume that risk by purchasing the loans. AEA would be able to purchase those back, thus retaining that risk. Section 4 of the bill amends AIDA statutes to allow AIDA to purchase these loans as an investment of its revolving fund. Section 5 of the bill is the amends uncodified law to allow for this approval for AEA to sell and AIDA to purchase these loans. And Section 6 provides for an effective date.
Do we have any questions, initial questions, for Ms. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who benefits from this type of ability for AEA to go ahead and sell these loans and buy back the defaulted loans?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the benefit is to future borrowers of the Power Project Fund. It allows us to raise capital for the program in order for us to issue more loans. The authority to repurchase any loans that would perhaps default allows AEA to get the highest price that it can. There is a discount rate applied to this purchase. So AIDA not assuming that risk, we did not have to go through a risk analysis of those projects, of these loans that have already been issued and paying, and thus allows AIDA to pay a rate for the portfolio closer to par.
Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
What kind of is there a discount to buy back these loans if they are defaulted on?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I believe the rate to repurchase, it's in the MOU, I believe it's with a... It would be an annual rate of 4% if it wasn't repurchased in 30 days. So it would be basically the repayment would happen immediately, and if it hasn't been if AEA doesn't repurchase within 30 days, it would be a 4% rate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions, Ms. Gold? Okay, we have 4-0 fiscal notes in your packet, 2 from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, 1 from the Department of Revenue, 1 from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. We have no one online, and we have no one signed up in the room. Do we have Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at the interest rates on these loans, and it looks like you're going to be buying these back 6%, but none of these interest rates are at 6%. So,
could you help us with that concept, please?
Through the chair, Senator Egan, the 6% is the discount rate that ADA that would be applied to the purchase of the portfolio, and that discount rate takes into account the longer term cash flow of these loan payments, and that some of them are at 0%. So what we did to determine that discount rate is we ran the cash flow out to the we ran the cash flow of these loan payments out and then discounted it back to get a present value computation, and that 6% discount rate accommodates that it accommodates that cash flow. So
So even though there are only a couple of loans that even approach 6%,
through the chair, Senator Egan, the 6% discount is based upon the cash flow that it's the discount rate that ADA has applied based upon the investment rate of ADA in order to purchase the loan. So the 6% rate isn't tied to the interest rate paid on the loan. The discount rate is tied to the cash flow.
Got it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other question? Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside for further review. Last up today, Senate Bill 287 by Senator McGuire regarding in-state gas pipelines. First hearing on this bill. The intent today is to introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. And we have representation from Senator McGuire's office. If you could walk us through this bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mike Pawlowski, and I'm an aide to Senator McGuire. Senator McGuire asked me to express her apologies to the committee for not being here in person today. She was online earlier and had to drop off. Senate Bill 287, Mr. Chairman, has gone through several changes from the initial concept to the bill that's before the committee today. What started was looking at where the in-state gas pipeline project started last year, and that was in authorization in an appropriation in the Supplemental Appropriations Bill. That would be Section 19 of Chapter 14 of Session Law of Alaska 2009. That project was initiated under the Office of the Governor and has progressed in that position to the point of what could be described as pre-feasibility on the project. What Senate Bill 287 attempts to do is to find a more permanent statutory framework to advance that project to what could be described as feasibility on prior to a bankable feasibility. That is to complete the right-of-way, work to gather letters of interest from commercial buyers and sellers of gas, and to seek letters of interest from private pipeline companies that might be interested in constructing an in-state natural gas pipeline. Senate Bill 287 accomplishes that by amending the provisions that govern the Alaska Railroad, in particular Section 424560, which was existing law that allowed the Alaska Railroad to issue bonds to finance a gas pipeline. You'll find this authorization on page 3, section 3 of Senate Bill 287. In this section, in the S version, explicit authority for the construction, acquisition, and development of the gas pipeline project, an in-state gas pipeline project, has been inserted into the railroad's existing authorities. The majority of the language added on page 3 from line 9 through line 31 is intended to be quite specific about the project that's being described. There are several efforts out there on the table to commercialize Alaska's North Slope gas. What the language on page 3 is attempting to do is to limit the authorization to the Alaska Railroad for the project that money was appropriated for in the Supplemental Appropriations Bill last year. You'll see on page 3, lines 29 through 31 in sub 4, that the goal of this effort is to be compatible, but not competitive with other efforts to commercialize in-state gas. Explicit direction for the railroad is found in section 4, which is the next section of the bill on page 4, describing the mechanisms through which and the progression that the railroad is required to go through to develop this project and bring it to the point where, understandably, the big decisions can really be made. This bill is not about taking an in-state gas pipeline all the way through to construction, but laying the foundation so that the legislature and governor can make the big decisions on it in the next year or two. The important points in section 4, Mr. Chairman, are found on page 4, line 26, through page 5, line 6. This is the grant of a non-exclusive right-of-way and a process to achieve that right-of-way from the Department of Natural Resources. Section 5 is in the uncodified law and is transitional language that will give distinct tasks and line items to the Railroad Corporation to advance this project. The key points being page 5, line 16 through line 27, Mr. Chairman. That would be sub 2, sub 3, sub 4, sub 5. Sub 2 being, as I mentioned earlier, to seek letters of intent from buyers and sellers of natural gas. This is to gauge the market that an in-state pipeline might serve. Section sub 3 is to seek letters of interest from private pipeline companies. The goal of the original appropriation was in effect to de-risk the project, to remove some of the obstacles to an in-state gas pipeline that might exist out there. In doing that, the goal was always to reach out to the private sector to see if there was interest in the private sector to construct this project. Subsection 4 is governing reporting any initial legislation that might be necessary to advance this project. And subsection 5 was to identify, define, and submit to the legislature long lead term items. On page 6, Mr. Chairman, sub C, which is found on page 6, lines 8 through 19, this is an important provision that was added in the Senate Resources Committee that provides a mechanism to cancel progress on this project. The idea of canceling the project and making it difficult, Mr. Chairman, was when Senator McGuire and others started looking at the issue of the in-state gas pipeline, the concept was to take the actual work and development and move it as far away from politics as possible. The goal in selecting the railroad was we evaluated the different public corporations that exist in the state that could carry out this type of work. In evaluating those corporations, we settled on the railroad as the appropriate entity, largely because the Alaska Railroad has a strong institution with a vibrant board of directors that is accustomed to overseeing project management, right-of-way issues, and engineering. The original version of SB 287 included the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to talk about the financing of the line. However, as we move forward doing what some might say is called task organizing, the entire project was limited to just what's described in Senate Bill 287 before you, and that is the definition of the project and the pre-feasibility of the project. The larger questions of financing were left out of this legislation. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. If I might make one comment, we received several fiscal notes this morning that deserve further attention from the committee.
Do we have any initial questions? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious, and thank you for your run through of the bill. On page 3, line subparagraph 2, line 16, 17. I was curious, this contemplates the commercial development of two primary sources of natural gas, the Prudhoe Bay Central Gas Facility. Is that, there is already a central gas facility. Is this just a reference to a new gas treatment plant of some kind, or is it anticipated that the central gas facility would be one of the sources of natural gas?
Senator Thomas, through the chair, a gas treatment plant most likely will be required for any project. The goal of subsection 2 was to identify points of supply for the project. So in that gas came from the central gas conditioning facility, then the gas would have to be treated. The location of the gas treatment plant is separate. The goal was to be very narrow in the project that the railroad was tasked to consider so that rather than looking at multiple aspects and multiple projects, we could focus the task and move the project forward.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Any other initial questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at the CEO of the railroad changing because he's taking a new position, a new CEO coming on board, are you anticipating any outlook as far as, I guess the concern is that whether the new CEO has any expertise in pipeline building or even issues related to that?
Senator Olson, through the chair, it's a very important question. When we initiated work, of course, we had no idea where the CEO would be moving to or even that the CEO might move. What is important is not necessarily the CEO themselves, but actually the work product. Currently, there is a series of contracts that have advanced the project to this point. Those exist right now under the Office of the Governor. Under this proposal, SB 287, that work would shift to the railroad. What we saw as important was the actual structure of the railroad in that they are exempt from the Executive Budget Act, can look at things like a private sector business, and that those contracts would smoothly transition. We've worked closely with the administration to ensure that that might happen in the event that SB 287 passes. We have asked the chairman of the board of directors, John Binkley, to be here to speak to how the organization can answer the question you've asked as well.
Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, we have a couple of fiscal notes in the packet, a zero fiscal note from the Department of Revenue. We have one from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for $34,220,000 and general funds for $11 to reflect the cost of the railroad for permitting and preliminary engineering. The second page of that fiscal note, the total runs up to $65 million over the next several years. And then there's a new fiscal note from the Department of Natural Resources that'll be forthcoming, I guess, in the next day or so. We have several people online. We're going to open the public testimony portion. We'll like you to speak to the Bill 287. We'll start with the former Governor Sheffield. If you can identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the bill, please.
Mr. Chairman, who did you ask for?
Governor Sheffield.
Oh, okay, because the mute part come in on the telephone at the same time you were talking, so I didn't hear you. Anyway, thank you very much. This is Bill Sheffield, director of the Port of Anchorage, former governor. And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to say just a few words. I'm sure many people want to talk, so I'll be very, very brief. We've been talking about a gas line almost as long as we've been talking about our bridge up here, but since I got here in 53, we've been talking about a gas line ever since we hit oil. But, you know, I think you're so close to being able, with a bill, to mark the project of a gas line and have an opportunity at this point to advance the project. If you pass the bill this year, that it will advance, and then by January 2011, it looks to me like you'll have a lot of information that you didn't have before, and then you can start to zero in with the legislation that would allow the gas line to proceed. So this bill is doing the foundation work. It establishes the right-of-way and the invitation to Alaskans to promote it, and what other things can we do with the gas? And it's in proposal line, and then this bill takes it out of the governor's office and puts it in a state operation owned by the state, the Alaska Railroad, which has a lot of engineering capabilities. It has a strong board, as has been mentioned. And
not build pipelines before, but they do engineering and bring things up for a project to and manage it. And so while the governor's office is, of course, going to want to have a hand in it, it takes it out of the governor's office directly, so because the governor has other things to do besides oil and gas. And but still could have a hand in it. So I think that this is a chance to have a gas line, hopefully, lower the cost of living to everybody that has the gas, and creates a lot of jobs in construction and a lot of jobs following construction that we never had before. And if even by passing the bill this year, people would have a new outlook on life. We haven't done anything in a long time, and anything big, and so I hope that you will do your best to get that done in the next couple of weeks, and when you leave Juneau, you've passed some legislation that will advance the project to the next level. That would be important to the people of Alaska. And I thank you for the time.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. John Cook, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Cook. I serve on the Board of Directors for the Alaska Railroad Corporation and I'm CFO for Airport Equipment Rentals. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before the committee today. I'd also like to thank Governor Parnell, Senator McGuire, Speaker Chenault, the In-State Gas Caucus for recognizing the need to expand in-state gas supplies in the near term. It's definitely a critical and complex issue, and your committee's attention to this matter is definitely appreciated. The Railroad Board's position on in-state gas is that whatever bill emerges from the legislature and is signed by the governor, we will carry out its mandate to the best of our abilities. And we appreciate the faith that the sponsor and others have in the railroad. We've got a strong board, as has been mentioned, and a great management team and an outstanding group of employees. Personally speaking, I think a backup plan for gas in case an in-state, a large diameter line does not happen, I think it's prudent and responsible. Even if a large diameter line does happen, I think there's a need for a bridging solution in the near term, as we have a problem today. In my professional capacity as a CPA and CFO for a company that's the largest equipment rental company in Alaska and one of the largest property developers in Fairbanks, I wanted to let you know how the lack of gas supply is negatively impacting the private sector economy today. Our local gas utility, Fairbanks Natural Gas, trucks gas from South Central, which results in a higher cost of fuel, placing an additional financial burden on consumers and businesses. Their largest constraint, however, is lack of gas supply. Due to South Central's shortage, they cannot obtain additional supplies of gas to expand their customer base. Dan Britton at FNG has been working on a solution for that to help increase supply, which could be one of the potential bridging solutions that have been mentioned above. However, the fact remains that right now FNG does not have sufficient capacity to add new large customers. Our company has a property development arm. We own buildings and raw land in the new retail area of Fairbanks. We go out and negotiate long-term leases with big box retailers, build their stores for them. All the big box retailers build their stores to very strict prototypes. All those retailers require the use of gas-fired rooftop units. Currently, we're assembling a development of several major national retailers, which would result in a $25 million construction project, which would create hundreds of construction jobs and full-time jobs once the stores are opened. Unfortunately, this project will not proceed due to a lack of gas supply. We also have a potential sale of a large tract of raw land, which will also not happen until the gas supply problem is rectified. I'm aware of two other large developments in Fairbanks that have not proceeded due to a lack of gas supply. In addition to the burden high energy cost places on consumers and businesses, there's no doubt that economic development is being hindered right now. If we can't invest our dollars here in Fairbanks, we either do not invest them at all or we invest them somewhere else, possibly outside Alaska.
Could I get you to finish up, please?
Yep. I guess I would just urge you to give your attention to this matter. In-state gas, it's an important one. The private sector investment and development that will be unleashed if this problem is solved. It's tremendous. There will be hundreds and thousands of jobs created and millions of dollars that will be put into play. Thank you for your time. Appreciate your any questions you may have to ask.
Thank you. Okay, well, that concludes our off-net, and we have no one signed up from the LIOs. We have several people signed up to answer questions. Mr. Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, again, good morning. Still John Binkley from Fairbanks, this time with my Alaska Railroad hat on. And appreciate the introduction of this bill and also your hearing the bill this morning. Although this is not an assignment that the Alaska Railroad has been out seeking, it is certainly one that we feel very comfortable with, very capable of, and certainly meets our mission of facilitating economic development in Alaska. We are somewhat unique, as been pointed out. The Alaska Railroad Corporation Act, as was created by this body, the legislature, set up a very, very unique Alaska-owned institution. It has a very public purpose of economic development for all of Alaskans, but it does so in a manner that's consistent with the private sector in terms of accomplishing that. So we are tasked with providing that economic development, but doing it as a profitable corporation. And so we focus on our customers in that regard, making certain that we have a strong customer base and are able to be profitable in those pursuits. As I understand the involvement as envisioned in this bill, the Alaska Railroad would take the existing work program that is going forward and pull that under the Alaska Railroad's responsibility, focusing at this point primarily on the permitting, the right-of-way, the design, looking at the EIS, to present a feasibility study back to the legislature for you then to make a determination whether you want to continue on with that project to go to the next step, which would be the bankable feasibility statement coming out. And so, as I mentioned, we are used to doing large projects. We're in the middle of a project currently that's about a $150 million project that we're constructing. We've just completed an EIS on a $700 million project in expanding the rail to the east towards Delta Junction. We have some insulation, really, from the political process. We have a very strong board of directors. I've had the privilege of serving there for the last 15 years, since 1995, through several CEOs, through several governors. And there's stability, as was mentioned, a great management team in effect. And even though we are in a transition point right now, looking for a new president and CEO, this really gives us an opportunity, should you choose to involve us and include us in this project, to shape what that position and what that person and the expertise they may bring to the table would be. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions that may surround how the railroad would be involved in this project and what our capabilities are.
We have any questions for Chairman Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, we were asked earlier by Senator Olson whether or not the transition of leadership, do you see that as an impediment to the railroad, you know, occupying a pivotal position on this project?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, not at all. I think it really, as I mentioned, perhaps provides an opportunity as we shape what the mission of the Alaska Railroad will be, what type of leader we're going to look for as we proceed forward. So I think it provides a great opportunity, really, in choosing a new president and CEO, should this responsibility be given to the railroad by the legislature. But it really isn't any one individual in the Alaska Railroad that's been the success of the railroad for the last 25 years. It was in the beauty of the statute that was created by this body that envisioned that public purpose through private sector means to achieve success and provide for economic development for Alaskans. And that has been through a strong board of directors that has some insulation from the political process that then can focus on customer service to make certain it's profitable and continue to support itself throughout time. So as much as I would love to take credit for it as a board member, as many former CEOs would like to take credit for it, as all of our great employees, it really isn't. It's the structure of the railroad that has created its success and hopefully will be successful on into the future, whatever role we have.
Senator Huggins, follow-up.
Thank you. One follow-up, Mr. Chairman. John, I've often said that, in my estimate, that this project, this a successful in-state gas pipeline, is in the best interest of the railroad as we go forward in economic development in the boom, potentially, it's been described by some. But you give us a few words on that?
Well, certainly. It is critical for us. We feel the economic downturns like any other business, private sector business, in the state of Alaska. We're concerned right now. We've gone through a period of contraction over the last couple of years as we've seen some of our revenues decrease, particularly Flint Hills, the hauling of refined petroleum products from the North Pole refinery down to the Anchorage market. That has had a substantial effect on the Alaska Railroad. We've reacted to it. We've had to reduce about 125 employees over the last 2 years, which is always painful. But since we have to maintain profitability, we have to react quickly and downsize, just like any other business does, to maintain the health of the corporation. So we see this not only as a potential role for the Alaska Railroad, but should we proceed with in-state gas, the economic really viability of Alaska going forward is so critical with this project, not just from the jobs in the construction of the pipeline itself, or of the low-cost or affordable energy over a long period of time, but also the manufacturing, really starting to build an economy, not just with the ethane that would come down in the gas line, but the gas liquids that can really start to be the building blocks for an industry here in Alaska. We're very excited about that and the potential that it will bring for the Alaska Railroad, like it will for all businesses. So that's an important part, and I really commend the legislature and the governor for starting to pursue that. We've, as has been said before, we've all been so hopeful. Actually, since I've been in Alaska in 1953, I recently read a report from 1954 about natural gas out of the Gubik area, and what a boon that would be to Alaska to be able to get that natural gas down to the markets in Fairbanks and down the rail line to Anchorage. In 1954, we've been talking about it for over 50 years. So this is substantial. I applaud you for it, and I'm hopeful that it will go a long way in providing economic benefit, not just for the rail belt, but for all of Alaska. And one quick point back to your asking about the Alaska Railroad and our structure. Another key element really was how the legislature set up the board of directors. On the board of directors, we have the commissioner of the Department of Transportation and the commissioner of the Department of Commerce. And those two really work to further our goal of economic development and doing that through a transportation infrastructure. So we work very closely with those two entities. We also have a member who is a representative of one of our five labor unions on the job that sits on our board of directors. And so that really gives us a strong relationship with the labor unions that are represented by the Alaska Railroad or on the Alaska Railroad. And then we have four business people, each from one of the judicial districts along the rail line.
Senator, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hoffman. I'd like the record to reflect that Senator Hoffman and Senator Ellis have been here for about an hour.
More than an hour. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the fiscal note, we have $9.5 million for pipeline engineering. What do you envision that product we would get for that $9.5 million?
Mr. Co-Chairman, through the Chair, this really is a very preliminary estimate, Senator Hoffman, and we anticipate as this is refined, we've been waiting to see how this legislation evolves, really, to start to fit together a tighter fiscal note. We've been in the process of that, but waiting to see how this, as I said, evolves. So we have taken primarily the anticipated costs that are now being worked through the governor's office with the existing contracts and personnel to pursue the pre-feasibility study and the feasibility study, and those are the numbers we've really used.
Well, on the fiscal note, maybe we can have the bill sponsor come forward because the questions might, and maybe you could stay there too.
Okay.
Page 2 of the fiscal note, it talks about, you know, a well-founded cost estimate for construction is due in June of 2010. June is not very far away. How are you going to get June in 2010 with the complexity of a project this magnitude?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, this is Mike Pulaski, aide to Senator McGuire. We had raised that issue as well with the liaison to the railroad. The original bill had asked referenced a permit schedule that was designed in 2009. Since the management transition from Mr. Noah to Mr. Swenson, that schedule has slipped. And there's current fiscal year work going on that will be complete July 1, 2011. That should be accounted for in the current fiscal year. The question is, what is the money going forward? This fiscal note will absolutely have to change to reflect that change in the bill.
Okay. Other questions on this subject? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was looking at page 4, and when we talk about personnel and who's operating what, section 4B, 1, and 2 talk about establish, maintain, and operate a subsidiary of the corporation to perform the work described in the section. I think that's well advised, because malice intended toward the railroad, but I don't think the railroad is really intended to build a pipeline, nor over any of the other entities that are involved in the bill. To me, I think you need, and I understand Michael Baker Corporation is involved, so somebody of that standard I would think would be there. I don't think you want to try and convert your engineers to pipeline engineers and that type of thing. So hopefully that's the intention of both one and two, as we look for permits and for engineering, that work will be subcontracted to corporations or entities that actually have that type of experience and so on. I'm hoping that's...
Can you respond to that or help sort that out?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Thomas, through the chair, that's exactly the... You're correct in identifying the issue. When Senator McGuire reached out to the railroad, of course, you're asking the railroad to do something that they didn't seek. And insulating the existing operations of the railroad from the task that you're asking the railroad to take on was the reason the direction to create a subsidiary corporation was included.
And I had something else, but it was just a comment more than a question, or we might wait till people are done, or however you want to do that.
Well, you can make your comment now if you'd like. We're winding down. We've got...
I think we are, too, as well. Yeah, a couple more minutes here. Yeah. You know, I recognize the importance of the bill and also applaud the maker, the author of the bill, although after taking a look at it, there are a couple of issues that concern me, and first and foremost is Alaska hire and Alaska Native hire, something that was complained about somewhat dramatically during the last pipeline, and I hope we will make some effort to try and at least address that issue in this bill, if nothing else, that we make sure that it's a prominent concern of people as we certainly go forward. And also in relationship to that we, since we're going to spend a fair amount of money, and I've already spent a fair amount of money, that we also address the concept, and we're changing the timelines here and looking at a bullet line type of pipeline versus the importance of it, the training programs to make sure that the people that are necessary to work on this job are trained. So I think those are two issues that are critical that should be addressed, so people know up front what we're looking at, and I hope these will be addressed in some manner, and hopefully before that bill leaves this committee that will address them. So just a comment.
And I guess a question for the bill sponsor. For us to secure a gas supply, we have to deal with the unit agreements, and we also have to deal with the 0.5 BCF limit under AGEA, which severely restricts the amount of gas that we can take down as far as trying to get a synergies or efficiency of scale. So what has the bill sponsor's concept on dealing with those issues?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. It's an important point. The addition on page 3, which is section 3, lines 29 through 31, came about from working with the administration. The compatible but not competitive language referencing the AGEA project was an explicit acknowledgement of the 500 million cubic feet a day limit under AGEA. Could
you give us a line reference, please?
Oh, certainly, Mr. Chairman. That's page 3, lines 29 through 31. And the particular reference is 4390, I believe, Mr. Chairman.
that's compatible.
Does that reading of that language then restrict our development to 0.5 BCF a day or less? What does that say?
Mr. Chairman, that language specifically states that whether we can exceed the half a BCF a day limit, my understanding is that you cannot do that without exceeding the treble damage provision. And so the point being that you could look at scenarios that might exceed a half a billion cubic feet a day, but in terms of advancing the project, that type of decision would have to be taken later.
We could possibly be, if we need a 1 B a day, billion cubic feet a day to make the efficiency, then we could possibly have to deal with triple damage issue under the GEO contract and factor that into our cost analysis. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly correct. And one of the reasons that on page 5 in section 5, lines 22 through 24, one of the tasks of the railroad was the identification of legislation that may be necessary. In the event that the economics pencil out that the letters of intent found in sub 2, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, that would be sub 2, lines 16 through 18 on the same page, in that the producers and the market of the gas express an interest in something larger than a half a B a day, legislation might be necessary to change that in the future. That was all contemplated. We don't know how the project will shake out, but they need the authority to look at all the scenarios and at least come back with suggestions that if Alaska ends up in that position, they can look at the issues by next fall.
But is that not too simplistic, because we have a contractual arrangement with TransCanada Alaska under a GSO, even though we can have suggested language requirement to come back to the legislature, we still have a contractual obligation sitting out there to deal with?
Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely correct. The contractual obligation would still be out there in the event that more than a half a B a day becomes what's necessary for the project.
And for those watching at home, the concern is on the efficiency of scale issue, that the price at the consumer level is extremely high at 250 million or 500 million cubic feet a day, and we don't really get efficiency of scale, as I recall, till we start passing 750 and get to 1 billion cubic feet a day.
Mr. Chairman,
analysis being done, is that correct?
In the initial analysis, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. However, the official analysis won't be complete until July 1, 2011, under the current cost estimate work being carried out. There's been other work and initial looks at it taken, but the final preliminary feasibility we won't see until July of this year.
Just wouldn't want people to lose sight of a contractual obligation we have that with triple damages hanging over the people's head. Do we have any other final questions for the bill sponsor? And seeing none, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside for further review tomorrow. Today, the 1:30 meeting is canceled. For those of you that may have it on your calendar. Tomorrow, Tuesday, April 6th, 9 a.m., we have four bills up. We're scheduled to introduce a CS for Senate Bill 230, the capital budget. That will not be ready. House Bill 160, so that will not be up tomorrow. House Bill 162, Southeast State Forest, followed by Senate Bill 203, Cook Inlet Gas Storage Facilities, Senate Bill 208, DNR Study on Natural Gas, and then, of course, we have bills previously heard. With that, this meeting is adjourned.